Hi, everybody. This is Paul Eiting. I'm Grandpa Max in Ben 10, and you're listening to Talk Sci-Fi.
Hi, this is Eugenia Stapira.
And this is Jerry Donaldson.
And you're listening to Talk Sci-Fi.
Now, in this, we have a bit of a treat for people.
I love this show.
She does love this show, believe me. She does love this show. And we are talking, of course, about Doctor Who.
Doctor Who.
See what I mean? This is so embarrassing. Absolutely embarrassing. The TV show has been around for 50 years in different formats,
mm-hmm.
although it hasn't quite had 50 years of complete runs.
No.
But it's been an audio. You could buy that. It's one of the first fan magazines that were actually around.
And the first novelizations of probably of TV shows that's been continuous.
It's been continuous. And it's spawned a few other types of shows, at least three.
A few spin-offs.
Although one that nobody talks about, which is the early Sarah Jane Adventures.
Oh, yeah. Well, I only had one episode.
And it was good that it probably only had one episode because the later one was much better. K-9 and Company.
As opposed to the Sarah Jane Adventures, which were excellent.
And you have another K-9 show as well that happened.
Yes, which
was made in Australia. Which was made in Australia.
Yes, I know it was made in Australia. It was in conjunction with Channel 9, I think.
And that lasted for about 20 episodes?
Something like that. It had a regenerated K-9. Had what I call the puppy version of
K-9. It was very much set for children as opposed to the real K-9, who we've been lucky enough to meet over the years as well. So that's quite exciting. But we're not going to have K-9 in this show. We have him in our other show.
We do.
Check out the end of the podcast for a different address if you want to have a listen to that. What we consider a special guest is the cutest doctor, I have to say, in my opinion, over the many 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
He was probably the cutest when he was younger.
Yes, I would put David Tennant as a close second.
No, David Tennant, second maybe, but no, he wasn't
as handsome cute.
Handsome cute was this doctor, and this is the fifth doctor.
Yes.
And his name is Peter Davison, mm-hmm. who we now know is the father of the doctor's wife, who was also the doctor's daughter, even though he was married now to the doctor. It's confusing, isn't
it? He is. Well, basically, David Tennant is his son-in-law.
That's right, yes. And there's Peter Davison's daughter played the Doctor's daughter in one of the modern versions.
The Doctor's Daughter.
Yes. And Peter Davison's been around in lots of things. Tristan in All Creatures Great and Small.
Well, that's
which everybody loved him.
Yes.
And then he's done quirky shows many times.
He has. Different comedy and drama. He's a very versatile actor.
And he was very cute when he was young. He's one of my favourite characters in All Creatures Great and Small, even though he was the naughty character. But then we always like a naughty boy, don't we, in terms of it. But Doctor Who, I mean, what can you say about Doctor Who?
What can't you say about Doctor Who? It's an amazing show.
It's an amazing concept. They were very clever whoever brought up the regeneration thing, weren't they?
Oh, well, they were stuck for a storyline, weren't they? Because suddenly William Hartnell, who was the first Doctor, they began to see that he really couldn't continue. He was getting quite frail and forgetful.
Even though he was young.
Well, he was only in his early 50s.
So compared to some of the, like, the current Peter Capaldi, he was younger.
Yes, he was at the time. So they had to...
Medical advances in 50 years, eh?
They had to do something because obviously the show was still very, very popular, helped by the Daleks. I don't think if the Daleks had been created that Doctor Who would still be available and around. It would have just been forgotten. Oh, I love the Daleks. I can still remember as a child, you know, you'd walk around the playground and everyone was exterminating each other playing Daleks. It was quite
She showed her age, hasn't she?
Well, yes. But it's a very violent show when you think about it.
It is. I mean, the concepts in the 50s, I think, you came out of World War II, you know, that time as we moved into the 60s. So 50 years ago, people had lived in a very rough time and therefore violence was quite prevalent to them. So we have the soldiers who are still, you mean all those movies that were made, were War II movies were made in the 60s. So it was that time and of that era. I know the Doctor Who currently says he doesn't kill, but they basically, the first one did. He wasn't as, you know, as nice
No, he was a grumpy old man. That's for sure. That's what people forget. And sometimes when the Sixth Doctor, Colin Baker, gets ridiculed for being so grumpy and
number one was grumpy.
He was grumpier and used to tell people that his companions off all the time. In fact, he kidnapped his companions.
And not only that, he used to tell them how intelligent he was, basically, as yes. well. So he was quite an arrogant, bombastic kind of man, wasn't he, the First Doctor? But he still managed to start off the show.
He did. And then, of course, when he got frail and they needed to continue it, what do you do?
Regenerate. It was perfect. I mean, they're obviously limited at one's time because 13 regenerations was all you got.
But who knew that that show was going to continue for so long?
For 50 years. So they've had to come up with different ways of doing it. And I think it's one of those discussions that Whovians have. How many regenerations can we have? Did he get extra ones from River Song, or did the Time Lords give him more when? And all of that. I mean, there are many things out there. If you look at fan fiction, there is lots of Doctor Who fan fiction yes. that is written by people. There are people now who are young people who are rediscovering the old Doctor Whos. Mm-hmm. And when you go to a convention, you see people dressed as the Second Doctor and the Third Doctor and the Fourth Doctor and that kind of thing. Although the Fifth Doctor is my Doctor.
Yes. Well, for you, for me, the Third Doctor's my Doctor. I still like fluff. I like the dandy.
I love Doctor Who. But when Peter Davison came around, I loved Doctor Who. It's amazing that the story has been managed. But that's the hero, isn't it? The guy who comes and saves everybody's life. I mean, it's one of those stocks. If we go back to things like Jason and the Argonauts mm-hmm. and the Iliad and a whole pile of
Superman,
it's one of those stories
Batman.
All the way through. So people want someone to come and fix it for them.
Which is where I think the newer episodes, in some cases, has lost its way a little bit because Doctor Who doesn't come in and save the day all the time. And for me, that loses it a little bit because I want my Doctor to be the one that comes and fixes things. Because when the Doctor comes to get me, I want to know that he's going to make everything okay.
She just wants to fly off in the TARDIS.
I do.
Along the way.
I've never wanted to be the Doctor, but boy, a Doctor's companion, definitely.
Now, we've been very lucky over the years to be able to interview four Doctors. We've met five.
Yes.
But to interview four of the Doctors from their earlier series, so the classic Who mm-hmm. and many companions as well. So we've really been lucky. Even the dog. We interviewed a dog.
Yes.
Which was really interesting. I don't think we can waffle on too much about Doctor Who because Doctor Who is just Doctor Who. I mean, it's in Australia, it's as iconic as it is
in
the UK.
Yes.
Because it's been on television basically since its inception in Australia.
A couple of years later, but it's like a lot of English shows, Australia has taken a lot of English shows to heart, just like England has taken a lot of Australian shows to heart.
Yeah, but we don't want to claim them.
No.
Some of us. I mean, Neighbours and...
And Prisoner. But
and
anyway.
Home and Away. I mean, no.
But
Doctor Who I'd rather claim.
But it has been part of Australian makeup for a long, long time. And if, especially if you lived in the country and the only thing that you could watch was the ABC, you grew up with Doctor Who. And people in metropolitan areas, I don't think they could miss it a little bit more. But you talk to anyone who grew up where the ABC was their only station, basically, and Doctor Who is something that they definitely know about and they love. You know, it's something that took in that early ages, you know, those early times, there weren't a lot of science fiction shows around. BBC were doing a lot of them, but they didn't all come to Australia.
No, they didn't. I mean, they had things like Quatermain and all of those kind
Time
of things.
Time Slip is another one.
Survivors and so on, all of those different things. So, and I mean, the Day of the Triffids, they did all of those. Wyndham, I think because of the literary tradition they had in England of those old writers who used to meet in H.P. Lovecraft, you have all of those all the way back. Science fiction has always been a part, since it was invented as a genre.
Yes.
Have very much been part of English literature. I mean, Frankenstein, Bram Stoker's Dracula. I mean, all of these things have very much, there's been a sort of fantasy come supernatural bent in English literature for a long time, probably most well-developed in the world until now.
That's it.
But back then, so the English were very much more into ghosty bits. I mean, even if you go to that kind of interesting fantasy, some of the ghosty things and the medieval things that were done by Mark Twain were actually set in England.
Mm.
They weren't set in the American.
No, that's right. It's like the Connecticut in
Connecticut, Court, yeah. And then you had the Canterville Ghost and all of those things, which were actually Americans in those countries. So I think the tradition, it comes out of that tradition.
It does. But when in Australia, we didn't get
well, most of us came from there.
Yes.
But most of us came from there originally as well. So Doctor Who is not unusual. It took a long time to warm up in America.
Oh, yeah. But then it was only shown basically from the Tom Baker era in America to begin with.
And the Tennant.
Oh, later with Tennant.
Eccleston and Tennant and then Smith and now
yes.
Capaldi.
Well, the new
now,
era.
But their originals didn't take off as well.
No, Tom Baker did for a while, but after that it died out again. And, I mean, it did here too. By the time Peter Davison, it was still going
very strong,
quite well
very
and strong. By the time Colin Baker came along, then the format changed. There was also trouble in the BBC and there were, you know, layoffs.
They didn't like him.
And they didn't like him, and so virtually he was tossed out eventually. And then we had, you know, a break, and then we had Sylvester McCoy, and then virtually we thought that Doctor Who had come to an end.
Well, except for Paul.
Well, that still didn't come for number of years later.
It didn't come for a number, and it was a movie version that tried to revitalize it.
Well, it was going to be the pilot, basically, of a series,
but they only
never
made
came
number.
About.
They rated number two on the, according to Paul, instead of number one on the preview ratings, and therefore it didn't get made into a continuing series.
That's
although
it.
Paul did hold the record of being the longest Doctor ever.
That's right.
So he has that. And it was really
his regeneration.
Yes. And it was really nice that we've now seen a regeneration.
I think
for
that
Paul.
Was fantastic.
And there's a YouTube episode with Paul McGann doing that regeneration. I think that was really, really great of Stephen Moffat. Conclude that particular portion.
I agree.
Of the story.
And we actually talked to Paul soon after that had been made. And he was just so excited about
it. We've had a very lucky life.
We have.
We've had a very lucky life. And we've managed to talk to Peter Davidson as well.
Yes, which was fantastic.
Yeah, we could go on and on and on about Doctor Who. We don't even have to do any research, do anything, nothing. I think we should stop.
Now, Peter's actual interview was done just before the 50th anniversary. So when you listen to it, if you haven't watched Doctor Who Reboot, which is what Peter talks about in the interview, you need to go and see it.
And we were lucky enough to be in the place where he was doing some recording for it at the same time, although we're not in it. But
oh, it is the
damn,
it's funniest thing.
It's very funny.
If
go
you
and
love
look
Doctor
on
Who,
YouTube.
I mean, I don't think that if you know Doctor Who, you wouldn't have missed this. But if you haven't heard about it, go and find it on YouTube because it is actually so funny, so well done, and the amount of people that pop up in it is it's hilarious.
Yes, the iconic little faces that you've seen in Doctor Who over many years in different ways, and the interesting little storyline and the comedy in it is actually really good. But once again, Peter Davison was my Doctor. And on that note, grudgingly let them listen to this interview.
Okay.
He's still my Doctor.
Okay. Hello.
Hello. Welcome to Australia, Peter. I have to say this. I have to say this because I say it to everyone all the time. I love Doctor Who. And then when you came along, I loved Doctor Who.
That's very kind of you.
You are my Doctor. And I'm just going to get my geek out moment gone. See, I finished.
Okay.
But you also look, when you the four of you were on stage with and with Janet as well, you just seem to have a lot of fun together. It's something that's lasted a long time.
It's this funny thing. People are a bit taken aback sometimes. We do tend to just stand there and insult each other for you know an hour or half an hour in this case today, but it was you know it's great. It's just the way it is, and it's fun. It's all out of affection, but people sometimes are a bit confused by it when they first hear it.
So is it the big finish and even the DVD commentaries that helped you to keep in touch with each other?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I suppose the commentaries in a way initially because I think they started before the big finish thing started. I'm not entirely sure about that actually because I'm getting very old and it's hard to remember. I think that's the way it worked. But then, yeah, I mean, there was a period of time when we weren't in touch after Doctor Who and I was off doing other things. But then at the moment that first the commentaries, then the big finish thing started, we kept in touch since. So it's great.
Now, you're not just Doctor Who. You've done some amazing work over the time. I loved you in A Very Good Human Practice.
Oh, thank you.
That was a weird, strange...
It was a very strange, slightly off-the-wall thing. You know, it's funny because everywhere, so many people from different universities all over Britain, after it went out, came up to me and said, it was about my university, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So clearly, it's a universal thing. All universities are completely mad.
Yes.
And run by fools.
And I loved A Guide to Parenting.
Oh, yeah. Oh, did you?
Yes.
Yes, I thought that was fun as well. Sad, I think it would have been much better if it was a BBC programme, to be honest with you. ITV wanted to try and change their image of comedy, which was a bit low at that particular time. And they went for this, but then they kind of chickened out after the first series. And rather than go for another series, they sort of went for the, you know, the sort of rather basic comedy which ITV is known for. It's a bit of a shame, I think, because it was nicely done and well written, and it was just a bit of fun, something different, you know.
It was. It needed more stories.
Yeah.
It had more stories in it, definitely.
Yeah, never mind. It's the way it is. It sometimes happens in TV. You know.
It's a hard life sometimes, isn't it? Because you don't know what's happening tomorrow.
In a way, that's the charm of it.
Yeah.
You know, that you don't know what's happening tomorrow, because but you know, in a way, it'll be something different. I mean, I don't think I'd do a series for more than about 3 years, because you simply want to move on to other stuff. It's very nice to have done it. But then you think, well, actually, now I want to go on and do something else. It's just the way actors think. I'm not sure if it's a wise thing. It might be wise just to find a nice show that's a long-running show and stay in it for your entire life. But unfortunately, we're sort of primed to, after a few years doing something, just to want to move on to something different.
Last of the Summer Wine, which was almost like the retirement home for British actors, unfortunately, has finished.
I can't go into that. It's a big shame, isn't it?
Now, you also enjoy music and composing music as well.
Yeah, I do, yes.
You've got your own studio, I believe.
I've got my own little sort of studio. It's sort of just a computerised home thing, and I've got some nice sort of keyboards and stuff. Yeah, and I still do it. I used to have a publisher, but it's so long since I've been in touch with him, he's probably dead and gone now. So, I mean, I don't know. I used to have this idea that if acting gave me up, I would sort of try my hand at writing songs, you know, that you could sell. I never had a particular ambition to do them myself. But acting has never given me up, so it sort of prevented me sort of from going on and doing other stuff. But it's fine. But I still do it at home in my spare time, just for myself.
So no interest in really publishing something out there?
Well,
I'm sure people would love Doctor
Who's
music.
Do that. I have thought about doing things like that, but I just keep running out of time. I literally do, because, you know, I'm just thinking, all right, I've got 2 months now with nothing to do, so I'll get down, finish my songs, a few songs, then give them to someone, and maybe we'll do it as a proper studio. And then someone offers me a job.
It's really inconvenient.
It's really inconsiderate. Yes.
It's to be so popular, it's just
it's
so
awful.
Terrible.
And then I could have done it this year, and then now it's the 50th anniversary, so I'm off around the world.
Mm. It's such a hard life. Being a Doctor Who, not only time and space, but the world as well.
Yeah.
With the 50th anniversary, I read somewhere that you said if the BBC don't do something with bringing you all back,
yes,
that you'll do it yourself.
Yeah, that's right, yes.
What would you have loved to have seen the BBC do?
Oh, no, I understand the BBC's problem. I think it would be very difficult to get us, the classic Doctors, back into Doctor Who, because we theoretically should be exactly the same age as we were when we left the series.
Yes.
And that's obviously not true. I know I did this one thing called Time Crash with David Tennant, but that was a kind of, in a way, you know, it wasn't part of Doctor Who. It was for children need, it was for.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, you're allowed to bend the rules a bit. And it was just as much about the 10th Doctor remembering being the 5th Doctor as it was about David Tennant, remember watching me on the TV.
Because you're his Doctor too.
Yeah, that's right. So we did that, but I understand the problem, and added to which, of course, we don't have the first three Doctors anymore. Mm. So it would have been difficult to get us all back in.
They could have brought you into a cartoon world, which you actually ended up,
yes,
as your characters with your voices. They
could have
actually done that.
Yeah, you could have done something like that. Well, they did marvellous scenes with that movie Tron. Have you ever seen
yes.
that? Tron
yes.
with Jeff Bridges?
Yes.
How the heck
yes.
did they do that?
Yes.
I've no
Why
idea.
Why couldn't
they
do that with you lot?
Exactly.
Hey, he looked 25.
It cost them too much money.
We're talking about the BBC, aren't we? Not American
exactly,
movie theater.
But there's no tribute...
Well, I,
or anything like that.
I just said that if you weren't going to be in it, it seemed we weren't, that I was going to do my own little thing. But it's not going to be, it wouldn't be a Doctor Who story with special effects or anything like mm-hmm. that. It's just a fun little thing that involves all the Doctors that aren't appearing in the 50th anniversary special. And hopefully, you know, I'll put it out on the day when the anniversary, 50th anniversary show goes out. And then the fans can watch it wherever it's on YouTube or Vimeo, and just so it's just a bit of fun. Mm-hmm.
So you're going to do a video?
I am determined to do
some of your own music.
I don't know. You see, I did something similar a couple of years ago for a convention that I missed in California.
Oh, was that the one when you were on stage for Legally Blonde, and yes. you couldn't attend, and you sent a little video.
I sent a little video.
That was fantastic.
Well, that's going to be similar to that kind of feel to it. You mm-hmm. know? And I did a follow-up to that the next year when I did go, and then I realised I'd forgotten all the timing, and I had 15 hours to get to the airport, and I missed the plane, and I went back, and then I saw the Doctor Who Experience exhibition, and went in there and found my TARDIS, and then went inside, and I ended up in California, and that was the sort of sequel. So it's going to be something. I want to do something like that. Just a bit of fun.
Yes,
the fans will
and
just
I think
like
they'll
it'll
love
involve,
it.
It'll involve everybody, and hopefully we'll you know fill some kind of gap. But I've got. I mean, I've got the agreement at the moment of Stephen Moffat. He's going to be in it.
Oh, fantastic.
Brilliant.
But it's early stages, so I don't want to sort of say too much.
No, we'll put this up
closer to the day.
Yeah. But funny enough, I just shot a scene for it in there. About half an hour ago.
So you're a bit of a filmmaker then as well?
Well, you know, I just do it with my sort of... It's quite a good home video camera, but I just do it with that. And it's just a bit of fun, really. I mean, I did it, first of all, not knowing what would come out at the end of it for this convention. But what came out of it was actually quite funny. And so I thought, well, I'll do another one. And now I'm thinking, well, why not just expand this?
So do you want to write? Do you think there's something in you? Do you have stories to tell?
I have tried to write a pilot for something, which I thought, of course, was quite good. But it didn't sort of get anywhere. But, yeah, I mean, I could move in that direction. In a way, it'd be quite nice as you get older just to be able to sit at home and... My wife's a writer, so she sort of usually goes over a script that I've written and goes, well, you can't say that.
Everyone's a critic.
Yeah, exactly.
And the worst ones are at home. Yeah, I know that. My husband's back there doing that too.
Yeah.
I suppose with film production, because you do an amateur, is that something, would you direct or head towards that?
I suppose you'd, yes. I mean, I've not really thought it through. At the moment, I'm just doing really everything myself. So the ones I've done so far, I've written, directed and been in.
Yes.
There's a limit to how far you can do that.
Yes.
But we'll just see. I mean, at the moment, it's a bit of fun. It's a bit of fun. As we say, for there's one point in this script I've written where Sylvester says to me, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? And I go, it's for the fans. And we go, yeah, it's for the fans. But, you know, and we're sending it up. But in a way, you know, that's exactly what it is for.
Yes, and I think the fans enjoy the fact that you enjoy sending it up
exactly.
Because you've talked, well... Peter, thank you so much for spending time with us after a long day of being at conventions.
Pleasure.
And have a fantastic 50th year of...
Thank you very much indeed.
All the other work you do, we do love as well.
We do.
It's not just up there.
I know.
We could list them for you.
Yeah, we could.
We might even put a list on them.
Put the list on them.
Talk about that in the podcast, all the other things. Yeah. Law and Order.
Oh, yes, that's Law and Order, yes.
And Law and Order UK, yes.
That's right.
And you're Legally Blonde. I mean, that stage work, especially being in musicals, it's something that you...
Well, it's something I came to quite late on, even though I was fairly musical. I think I made the mistake early on because I played the guitar. When I would be sent for auditions for musicals, I'd foolishly just bring my guitar along and sing a song, you see. Well, of course, that's not what they want to see at all. Yeah. They want to see a bit of musical pizzazz. And I was sitting there on stage with my guitar going... And so it was some years before I actually got to do a musical, but I enjoy them now. You know, I think I'm limited as to how much of a musical I can do. You know, I can hold a tune very well, and I can convey a song, I think, fairly well. But I couldn't sort of I mean, quite too old now anyway, but, you know, hold a, do a major part in a musical. I'm not that good a singer, but Legally Blonde was perfect. You know, I had one big number and joined in a few of the others, and it was great.
So you're a bit of a dance man too, then.
Well, I wouldn't say that, no. I think actually the dance things I would fall down on fairly badly, quite literally, probably.
Literally. Okay, thank you very much for your
thank
time.
Thank you okay. so much.
Thank you.
Really, yeah. really well done.
You've been listening to Talk Sci-Fi with Jerry Donaldson and Eugenie Stapira. If you'd like to catch us in our fuller episodes on our podcast, Women Talk Sci-Fi, you can do so at www.womentalksci-fi.com. That's www.womentalksci-fi, all one word, .com. Thank you for listening. Title music performed by Boxcat Games, called Breaking In, available at thefreemusicarchive.org under a Creative Commons license.